Good evening and welcome to Wednesday's Late Debate. Joining us tonight we have Christopher O'Sullivan, Fianna Fáil TD for Cork South West, Verona Murphy, Independent TD for Wexford, Pádraig McLoughlin, Sinn Féin TD for Donegal, Party Whip and Spokesperson on Fisheries and the Marine, and Gráinne Nié, journalist with thejournal.ie. While we want to hear from you, so do get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebate_RTE. Now, after a record number of 1,095 confirmed COVID cases here today and another 1,217 north of the border, within the last hour, the Taoiseach announced that Donegal, Cavan and Monaghan are going to level 4 restrictions from midnight tomorrow night. The rest of the country will remain on level 3, but with additional restrictions, including a ban on all non-essential visits to other homes or gardens. And we were listening to the Taoiseach there, but I think it's worth playing again. What exactly, first of all, what will this mean for Cavan, Monaghan and Donegal?
The government has agreed this evening to move counties Donegal, Monaghan and Cavan to level 4 of the framework. There are a number of key changes between level 3 and level 4. These include: people should not have any visitors to their homes. The maximum number of attendees at a wedding is 6. Gyms, pools and leisure centres will close. There will be further restrictions on hotels, guest houses and B&Bs. Non-essential retail will close. Everyone except essential workers must work from home. Construction and manufacturing will continue with proper protections in place.
And that's what's happening with that level, move to level 4 in Cavan, Monaghan and Donegal. And then, of course, there are these additional restrictions for the rest of the country.
No visitors will be allowed to homes or gardens, although exemptions like providing care will be allowed, and this will be made clear. In outdoor settings away from home and garden, up to 6 people from no more than 2 households can meet outdoors while maintaining social distancing. The exemption for club championships will be removed, and sporting bodies will be told that if they cannot maintain protective measures in outdoor training, such training should cease. We will be re-emphasising the message to businesses that people should not travel to their workplace unless they absolutely have to. And we will also be enhancing communications regarding the restrictions that are in place in a range of sectors, as well as emphasising the need for face masks rather than visors.
And as I say, that was Taoiseach Micheál Martin at that special briefing following a cabinet meeting where all those decisions were taken this evening. Lots to discuss there, but before I go to my panel with that, I want to go straight to Cavan and to the editorial director of Iconic News, Sheila Riley. Thanks for joining us, Sheila.
Hi, Katie.
You're up there in Red Hills near the border, Sheila. That move, that decision tonight, not unexpected, I suppose, it was flagged throughout the day. What will the toughest part of that be for Cavan?
Look, the reality is there'll be a lot of disappointment and dismay over it, Katie, but in truth, the figures have been rising, creeping up in the last week in particular. So there's kind of an inevitability in one way about tonight's announcement, but there will be a lot of dismay over, I think, in particular, kind of things like the non-essential retail closing, the no visits to private houses and gardens, that's gone. That's a huge thing. I know people, you know, weddings up to 6 guests, now reduced to 6 guests. That's devastating, obviously, for couples involved. So it's those type of kind of restrictions in particular, I think, will be very difficult for the communities, you know.
I suppose we should just say, just in case there's any brides or grooms to be out there very alarmed by this, that if they have their wedding planned for this week, weekend, it can go ahead under the restrictions that are in place as of now, and that those wedding restrictions don't come into place until Monday.
Right.
Just looking at the numbers, Sheila, though, Cavan, like the numbers in Cavan are really extraordinary, you know, when you compare them to other parts of the country. So the 14-day incidence rate for the country today is 190 cases per 100,000. In Cavan, it's 571 cases per 100,000.
Yeah.
Twice the rate that we have here in Dublin, and it's a rate we're worried about in Dublin. What's the sense there of, is there any sense of what, you know, what is this being attributed to?
Yeah, while on a greater scale, obviously, there's a lot of it's been attributed to the fact that we're on the border, and that surely has to have some significance. But in reality here, we had a number of kind of big public gatherings in recent weeks, particularly in late September, early October. There were two big county finals, and that kind of led to significant public gatherings afterwards and celebrations. And if you look at the data there, you can see that they were in and around kind of late September, early October, and the Cavan figures started to rise from then on and actually kind of hit the 80 mark on the 9th of October. So there definitely, you know, you'd have to say there has to be some sort of correlation with that. Now, the GAA locally are kind of obviously concerned about sort of the fact that they that there's some criticism being generated towards them, and the PRO of the county board said today, she's quoted today in the Anglo Celt as saying that, you know, she doesn't think staging the county finals caused an increase in COVID, but she acknowledged that people getting together afterwards could have been an issue, and pointed out, not unreasonably, that it is a matter of kind of.
Oh, I think we might have dropped that line to Sheila there. Yeah, she was just describing there. I have that quote from the Anglo Celt here. This was the PRO, Susan Brady. She said, "Do I think the staging of the county finals caused an increase in incidence of COVID? No, I don't. What happened afterwards with people getting together? Possibly, yes." Do we have Sheila back there?
Okay.
Sheila, yeah, okay. Hi. Sorry, we just dropped out for a second there. Yeah, I was just quoting the quote from the Anglo Celt from the PRO, Susan Brady there. In terms of where you are now, as I say, where you are, the issue that you mentioned there, the fact that non-essential shops, retail has to close under level 4 restrictions, and that obviously then will be a difference in what's going on at the other side of the border.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, but the reality, like the announcement in the Stormont announcements today, you know, are very significant as well. You know, those measures kicking in as well. And schools are obviously closed till the end of October. That's a big issue in reality. But people are being urged to work from home too in there. So in reality, you're going to see a drop in traffic anyway. But the truth of it is, I think, particularly in this part of the world, that a lot of the cross-border traffic, it's kind of been overinflated in that we have continually had cross-border traffic throughout the summer. You know, there's no more Northerners travelling over the border in the last 4 weeks in Cavan or 6 weeks in Cavan than there has been in August or July. I mean, that's just the reality of, you always have that a certain level of traffic over and back, and particularly for work, for school. I know numerous people in this area who travel over and back for one or the other. That's just the reality of life when you're up here, you know.
Okay, Sheila, I'll let you go because we have, as you know, a lot to talk about because a lot of changes coming on for the whole country tonight after those announcements this evening. But many thanks for joining us with that this evening. And I want to get to those new national restrictions in a moment, but just sticking with the border counties, Pádraig. Donegal right up there as well. I was citing the Cavan number there, but Donegal is 300 plus incidents, 14-day incidents. You've been obviously tracking these numbers since you have gone onto those the level 3 restrictions in the last number of weeks. It's flattening a little, but not coming down.
No, whenever this started, it was concentrated. Whenever this dramatic increase in Donegal started, it was concentrated in what's called the Finn Valley area in East Donegal, right there along the border with West Tyrone. And a bit in Letterkenny. And where I'm based in the Inishowen Peninsula was quite low at the start of it, but the numbers have gone up really significantly in the Inishowen area too. So it is spread quite strongly across the county.
And is it the sport, like that what Sheila was describing there in Cavan, not so much the sporting activities or events, but the celebrations that follow them. Is there links to that as well?
I just think that a section of our people, if we're being honest about this, they let their guard down. And like, on a human level, I can understand people are weary, they're tired. Maybe there was complacency set in You know, you long for that human interaction. You know, you're hugging your friends and having a bit of food and all the things that we love as human beings. And I think we have to be honest that that must have been what happened. You know, there's also the phenomenon of the super spreaders, and clearly there's clusters in and around, like Derry and Strabane areas, huge numbers per 100,000. You know, Belfast now has started to increase significantly. Obviously, Donegal, Cavan, Monaghan. So there's clearly clusters happening. But it's important to say for listeners tonight that if you look at the numbers in Meath, there's been a huge jump in County Meath, for example. They're now 300, almost 300 per 100,000. Clare
is very high as well, yeah.
So, you know, if anybody's getting complacent listening tonight saying, oh, that's a problem up around the border and in the north of Ireland, just drop your complacency.
Yeah, just see here, Katie, I said it before and I'll say it again. If cattle or racehorses could get COVID-19, it would not be in the country. Borders would be closed a long time ago. Remember foot and mouth. That's making a ton of more. Should there have been more done to police that border, particularly when we know, as you say yourself, that those numbers in Derry and Strabane really are like off the scale, world-beating kind of incidence rates. Should there have been more done?
I think that on an all-Ireland basis, I mean, we've been struggling at times to keep the same level of response, the same message. And even right now, like level 4 is actually a bit more stringent in Donegal, Cavan, Monaghan. It means that your non-essential retail is all closed or not closed across the border. You can still visit people's homes in the north. So there's still not a level field. And again, you know, in the decision that was made by government tonight, you know, arguably there probably should have been exactly the same response in around that region. So in terms of closing the border, no, I'm not going to advocate that. I think that's the issue was asking people to remain in their community. Now, I have to report this. I live in Buncrana. I'm very close to the border. Since the request was made in Donegal and Derry and West Tyrone for people to stay in their home place, they absolutely have done it. The numbers from Derry into, you know, where I live would normally be huge at weekends. You can see clearly it's dramatically, you know, it's almost not there at all. So in fairness to the people on both sides of the border, they really have adhered to the recent public health requirements. Absolutely.
And this news tonight that we are going to level 4, that this will have a massive impact on businesses in particular.
It's devastating. Like I was talking to businesses earlier on today and they actually weren't clear that's non-essential retail, you know, that they close under level 4. If I'm being honest, I wasn't 100% clear myself in the earlier conversations, and I went and double-checked everything, and the impact hit me, and it's absolutely devastating. So, I mean, this is a really important point tonight, is that, like, you know, we have had the cuts to the pandemic unemployment payment, we've had the cuts to the wage subsidy scheme, we've had a really poor response, particularly to hospitality, tourism, particular sectors that have been struggling. So there needs to be an urgent intervention in those counties, Donegal, Cavan and Monaghan, to make sure that the impact of this is ameliorated.
Christopher, I was just reading a text in here. This announcement by the government tonight is a political move by Micheál Martin to make a move ahead of NPHET. They should have waited for the public health advice tomorrow and then make countrywide decisions on the advice provided.
I don't accept that. I think it's a response to the increasing numbers. The numbers today again in the Republic were over 1,000. I believe they've gone now to the limits of level 3 in terms of house visits. That's a devastating blow. Like, my heart goes out to the border counties of Cavan, Monaghan and Donegal, what this will mean to them. I know that just before we came in here, Pádraig was explaining how he was getting calls from constituents who, you know, were incredibly upset about what these lockdown restrictions mean. And talking about the household restrictions, what that means socially is devastating. Obviously, the Taoiseach and the cabinet have felt it's necessary because clearly there's been a correlation between the spread of the virus and household visits and socialising.
For instance, what if we know NPHET are meeting tomorrow, and there we know from the statements from Dr. Tony Holohan this evening and tweets from Ronan Glynn, they are very, very deeply concerned about the levels of infection around the country. What if they advise again tomorrow that we go to level 5? Have we short-circuited that advice?
No, I don't accept that either, because what we have is actually a framework. We have a plan And we've seen, and actually what's happened in the border countries kind of demonstrates what happens when there isn't a plan. We've seen across the border in the north, they're making they're bringing in their lockdowns on a kind of an ad hoc basis. We've seen, and I think I heard Professor Luke O'Neill say this morning, that the north has one of, if not the highest rate of spread of the virus in the world. So there is a perfect example of how not to do it. We've taken a different approach. We have a plan. We're introducing lockdown on a phased basis. That's something that NPHET actually endorsed. So I think the Taoiseach, the Taoiseach, the Cabinet have taken a kind of a broader approach to this, more holistic approach. They're taking in societal issues. They're trying to protect the economy. And speaking about supports, and Padraig was talking about cuts to the PUP, you know, at least in Monaghan and Cavan and Donegal, they will now be able to avail of the COVID restriction support scheme. Those kind of supports are not there over the north. So, it shows
you know
the importance
why,
of those supports.
You know why that's the case? Because the British government controlled the purse strings. Look at the amount of money available in terms of unemployment benefit.
I know, Padraig, but you've Sinn Féin Minister for Finance in the executive.
Who's been appealing repeatedly to the British government up to today, up to tonight, appealing for additional financial support.
Listen,
when we get a United
part,
Ireland,
you can
criticise.
I prefer not to get into that. There's a serious announcement tonight.
Yeah, but you did get into it, in fairness.
There has been, this impact on the household restrictions will have a huge societal impact. I'm thinking about families who may live in the same town. There may be four or five branches of the same family and they won't be able to visit their parents. This is huge. It's devastating. But obviously, Cabinet and the Taoiseach have felt that it's a necessary step to stop the spread of the virus.
Just seeing another texter here, 51551 is our text line. All this endless diet of hand washing, mask wearing and physical distancing is now becoming increasingly meaningless. Why should I bother anyway? I'm thinking of throwing in the towel. Even lockdowns don't work. We cannot go on like this. We just can't. I think there are many people out there tonight who will be have that weary, weary feeling of, what's the point? What's the point of this? We're rolling from one lockdown to another. You're not a fan of lockdowns, Ron.
No, I'm not. And I appreciate we're all politicians here. And I think there's one very big problem. I'm 8.5 months a politician, and I've seen us go from crisis to crisis to crisis. And all I see is crisis management. And what I want to see, and I'm sure what the people want to see, even more than handouts, is crisis prevention. And we've had 7 months, 7.5 months now. We spent almost 3 months in lockdown, but I can't see any result. Like when Christopher says there's a plan of what closes. We have no plan of where we're going to prevent it. And I mean, you've got to have buy-in if that plan is to work. Like the World Health Organization has told us this week, lockdown is to buy us time to put preventative measures in place. I want to see for the country, for that person who's at the end of their tether, where's the plan to prevent lockdown the next time? We can't keep going to lockdown and ruining the economy. There are people driven over the edge tonight by this. And it's not the people just getting married. It's not the people. It's the people who know that they can't visit their people who are dying in nursing homes, coming to the end of their life. This just can't go on. We have to see crisis prevention. We've got to see the plan.
But what is, I mean, I hear you, what you're saying. I see that that's not the only text we've got in along those lines. You know that there's a weariness out there. But what is the alternative?
There is absolute desolation, but it's the figures. If you want the people to buy in, roughly we have a third of the population who understand that it's as serious as it is and they want lockdown. We have another third who understand it's serious and read more, it would appear, and understand false negatives are 30%. Of the testing we're doing. That's where the issue is. I am inundated with calls from Wexford constituents telling me they haven't been contacted by the HSE in 6 days. They know they're close contacts. Some responsibly are isolating. But what about the people who don't know, who aren't isolating? The PCR test throws up on the HSE website, these are not my figures, 30% false negatives. Even if we were contact tracing and should be contacting those that we know are false positives as well as positives, that's fine. that takes care of it. But we're not doing that. So we have 30% false negatives going around and possibly super spreaders. What we're doing isn't working. And I don't know what the answer is, but I know that the business of testing...
Well, we're told that this test is the gold standard.
It's the gold standard, but it still has a 30% false negative rating. And they're the people to be concerned about. We can't trace them. We can't do anything.
Would you not accept that our measures and what we've done and the measures that we've introduced are, you know, if you compare, just like I said earlier, if you compare with just across the border on the same island in the north, you've seen the figures, much higher, one of the highest on the planet in terms of the spread of the virus. Surely there's merit to some of the measures that we're taking, and the fact that there is a map there. There's a level one, there's a level five, and you can see the roadmap back when the figures improve.
I don't accept it.
So
I'll tell you why.
We're an island, there's individual responsibility as well.
Of course there is, but you've got to have buy-in. And the 30% that aren't buying in are probably of an age who, just like that text, aren't bothered because we don't have testing in our airports, we don't have testing in our ports, you can fly into Belfast, come over the border. All of those things are contradictory. We're saying, like, I feel very sorry for the GAA, for those who actually oversaw it. They did their best to get people's mental and physical health back into the social arena. And
so
then,
lockdown and restrictions aren't an option, what are the options? What are the viable alternatives?
You tell me where the plan is. What are we going to do after this lockdown, Christopher? After 4 weeks of level four.
But Verona, you're the one who's saying the lockdown is not the solution. So what are you offering as an alternative?
First of all, we have got to look at contact tracing the people we know who are positive. We have to contain those people as quickly as possible. Not 8 days later, Katie, 24.
But the experts will tell us that while that is very, very important, testing and tracing is very, very important, that on its own will not stop the spread of the virus.
Absolutely, I accept that. We're not going to be
ridiculed. So what is your solution?
We don't need to go to lockdown. We're in lockdown because the figures are building and because we're worried about ICU capacity. Where's the preparation for the ICU capacity that we were worried about in April?
Okay, I want to bring in Gráinne. Gráinne, I think it's that research that was published today, the latest Amoric research, I don't know if you're familiar with it, public opinion tracking research. This is the research that's conducted on behalf of the Department of Health. Mm. It found that 61% of adults think the government should do more. And over half of the people surveyed said they believe the government is not doing enough to control the virus. This is a poll conducted on Monday. The sample was 1,790 adults. Mm.
I was actually looking at those figures last week, and I was talking to an ESRI researcher about that. And basically, the more cases increase, the more worried the populations get and the more they want restrictions. So that's kind of why we're seeing an increase in the amount of people who want more restrictions. They basically want to feel safer. The number one concern people have, according to that research, and it's carried out each week, so you can look it up yourself if you're interested. The number one concern they have is about their family members, the healthcare system being overloaded, and the economy. So when they see cases go up, or when they hear about maybe in their local area cases increasing, they get more worried and they want more restrictions. So that's the reason for that. Something I just want to come back on that Verona said about false negatives. The false negative rate for COVID-19 PCR tests is between 2% and 30%. So it's not at 30%. It's a scale between those two figures. And I don't think that's really the reason why lockdown isn't working at the moment, though contact tracing problems definitely are. And I've been in touch with people, particularly parents, who are really concerned about not hearing from people fast enough. And it's a really basic thing that we need to get right. I suppose the problem that has people worried today is that this roadmap the government gave was based on two things. One was a graduated approach to give people foresight over what's going to happen, level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then the second thing was that it would be localized. So it wouldn't be a national level 3 or a national level 4 or national level 5. It would be localized. And that worked really well in Kildare, Laois and Offaly. But it's not working in Dublin and Donegal because the outbreak, where the outbreaks are happening, isn't really clear. So people, they don't know how to fight it. Before, it was in meat factories in Kildare, Laois and Offaly. We don't know where they're coming from this time. It's probably a little bit of everything, according to what the Taoiseach was saying tonight. Household visits, sporting events, people going to their office when they should be working from home, and slippage, as the Taoiseach said, in retail. So because of that, they're trying to kind of tweak at things to make it work better. But this is why it's so devastating. It's nationwide. It's happening everywhere from all sorts of different sources. And because of that, it's not really immediately obvious how you tackle it.
Can I just say, we are getting a massive, massive response on our text line. I just no way be able to keep up with them. I'll just give you a flavour of some of the texts we're getting. I live in the region of a very busy, well-known hotel on a border town. And every day, this is in caps, the golf course is full of golfers from Dublin and the north. Another text that just says simply, this will bankrupt Donegal. Another texter tells me, I work on a construction site, the biggest in the country. There is a lot of people travelling to work on it from border counties and from the north. Another person tells you, who is going to police the non-mixing of households? This is just another load of bull from the government. I think, just to be clear, that's not a regulation. That's advice, isn't it? Mm-hmm. There is no actual penal restriction there in place.
It's just
there.
Advice recommendation.
I just saw another one there. Surely I'm not the only one who thinks Tony Houlihan got it right last week and should have been listened to rather than ridiculed by Leo Varadkar. Can I ask you about that, Chris? Because I was just looking back at the numbers, and on October 5th, that was the 10 days ago when NPHET had that meeting and recommended that the country should go to level 5. The national incidence rate of infection that day was 107 cases per 100,000. That was the 14-day incidence. Today, the national incidence rate is over 190 per 100,000. So the numbers have gone up massively nationwide in the 10 days that we have been trundling along at level 3. In retrospect, should we not have listened to the people whose job it is to model these things, to tell us where the numbers are going to go, rather than going with the people who were basically worried about, obviously rightly worried about what was going to do to their businesses, but look, where has it left us?
First of all, look, NPHET's advice and NPHET's letter, their remit is public health and making decisions on public health grounds. The government and the cabinet obviously have to take other considerations before they make a call. So you have the societal impacts, you have the impacts of the economy. There's efforts being made to keep elements of the economy open while also allowing some bit of society remain in some type of normal situation. So it's very simplistic, I suppose, to look at the figures and say, let's go to lockdown, let's go to level 5, even though we have to say that NPHET had agreed on this graduated move from level 3 to 4 to 5 or whatever, move between the levels. So that is something that had been agreed with Cabinet prior to this decision. So,
but was there an actual agreement? Because I've heard this said before and that was never clear to me at the time. We were told there was 5 different levels, but it was never clear to me, or I never heard it publicly stated that we could only ever go from one to the other, that there was no way we would ever leapfrog over a level.
That's certainly two terms that, one term particularly that I would hear quite often when we're talking about the framework would be graduated. And when we say graduated, we would assume that that would mean move from level to level. It's something that I've heard Minister Donnelly refer to time and time again, that there was agreement that it would be a move from level 2 to level 3, level 3 to level 2, whichever way the figures were going. So listen, I think that the Cabinet have done, and the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste have taken a kind of holistic approach. They've looked at the societal impacts and the mental impacts and, of course, looking at the economy as well and trying to keep that open.
Well, just going back to that texter who suggested that NPHET were ridiculed rather than listened to, we can listen to a clip from the Tánaiste from Morning Ireland this morning. He was asked if he was right to say on that Claire Byrne interview that the advice from NPHET was not thought through.
You know, I don't want to go over all ground, but you know that was my opinion, and it was an opinion based really on a few things which I set out. Could any comfort be offered that a 4 week level 5 lockdown would only be for 4 weeks? Also wanted to understand better why other countries around Europe with a much higher level of virus, similar levels of hospital capacity, were not doing this. So, I had a lot of questions that I didn't feel were answered, but I'm willing to hear those answers at any time.
That was Leo Varadkar speaking this morning. Pádraig McLoughlin, we've got 10 days of numbers now to look at and compare to what was known at that time. Is that texter right?
Well, you had Tony Houlihan coming back obviously, convening the NFET meeting, he was officially back in office the following day on the Monday. He obviously looked at the numbers. He met with his senior colleagues, made the recommendation. I think there's two issues from NFET's perspective, and indeed one of their members made this clear. They were looking at the ICU numbers and looking at the hospital numbers, and they've modelled it. Unfortunately, when you look at these numbers here now, it appears that they are right. And they've been looking at, it's not the issue of the cases, it's the issue of the impact on the hospital system. Remember that as we entered this crisis, we were the worst prepared health service in Europe in terms of the number of ICU beds and the hospital capacity. So when we started the crisis, that's where we were at. And that has been the biggest problem for us throughout this. And our people need to understand that is we're so ill-prepared for this.
I think that has been very, very well rehearsed in this studio and every other studio around the country. I think that is accepted at this stage. But what Christopher was saying there, that they have to take, the government obviously has to take a holistic approach. Would Sinn Féin have gone to level five? Because I have listened and I have heard your colleagues, I've heard your party leader today dance around this question every time they're asked, well, should we have gone to level? Because you're very critical of how the government are responding to it. But yet you shy away from actually calling for the tougher measures yourselves.
The problems are this, and this is where Leo Varadkar's very controversial interview on prime time, where he essentially admitted that they were not ready in terms of the level of supports they could provide to workers and businesses to deal with the implications of that. This is the point that Verona's made earlier.
The main points he made, the main reasons he gave on that, it's the Claire Byrne live programme, was that it wasn't thought through, that it was experimental, that nobody else in Europe had gone there, that the NFET couldn't answer questions like, well, what happens if it doesn't work after 4 weeks? Those were the questions. Those were the issues.
Just to finish off this point, though, is that see, for the months where we went from the lockdown and we went back in through these phases again, there was two issues that have been massive failings. The issue of contact tracing, I can tell you now, I can verify what Verona said. In Donegal, I'm repeatedly hearing across the board that contact tracing is not happening. Even when we have like a cluster, a super spreading event in that region, contact tracing is not happening.
Because we just don't have the public health specialists on the ground?
We wasted months of opportunity. And the reason why NFET are making...
We've had this conversation now, you've gone on and you haven't actually said if Sinn Féin would have taken NFET's advice 10 days ago.
Well, the problem with that question is Sinn Féin didn't waste 3 months. It's the government that wasted 3 months. The government have to make that call. That's the reality of it.
But I have to say,
it appears to me now on public health grounds that the government have made a hames of the advice that was given to them.
But you still haven't answered that question. Given the advice that was given by NFET to government 10 days ago, would Sinn Féin, if Sinn Féin were in government, would Sinn Féin have gone to level five?
The problem with your question is, it is hypothetical in fairness. Because if Sinn Féin were in government, I don't believe we would have wasted all those months not doing contact tracing. I don't believe we would have cut the PUP. I don't believe that we would have cut the wage subsidy scheme. So therefore, if you look at the problem that the government had created, they left themselves in no position to deal with the public health advice. That's the problem. So in terms of the government,
position on level five is, if that any politician moves to level five, we should be all reduced to the PUP. I'm prepared to do that because I think that is where we are failing the people.
I think every politician,
every cabinet member, including the Taoiseach, should be reduced to living on the €300, not because it's a €300 payment, because that's when we'll be all in it together. The reality here is
that's an interesting. I'll just see if anybody else in the studio would agree with you there, Christopher. Would you be prepared to live off the PUP payment level if that was where the cabinet decided the country should go?
That's a doozy of a question, Kate. Thanks for throwing that in. But I just want to say we have Verona who doesn't want to go to lockdown. You have Pádraig, who won't answer questions in relation to where they move to live.
What I have said about lockdown is that there is no necessity. If the government were preventing instead of managing a crisis, we wouldn't need to be going to lockdown. The reality is, here here. This is pure desolation for people. We have got to look at the figures that Neffet are talking about. We need a breakdown. If people are going to buy in, we need to know who's in hospital, how many, who's asymptomatic, who's showing symptoms, how severe are the symptoms. Out of the people you're talking about, I can tell you, Katie, 62 people in Wexford, one hospitalisation, not critical, one in ICU. Most of the 60 people are asymptomatic, no symptoms, some contact traced, and this is why the hysteria is evolving. We have higher numbers. That in April, the same numbers...
Sorry, what is who's being hysterical?
Everybody is worried that, like, we have no doubt our numbers are higher. In April, we had 30 deaths with these numbers. 30 deaths.
But we know that that was largely because it had gotten into our nursing homes, and that was where most of the deaths were occurring.
And part of the prevention is education. We need to educate the cohort that are now being mainly affected to stay away from the vulnerable. Do not mix. Do your isolation and do it in the way that it should be.
Okay, I just want to ask before we go on. Would you take the PUP payment level if that's where the country
went?
Well,
I mean, Sinn Féin are quite famous for not taking their full wage for years. We've given back, I think it's about €9,000 per TD in recent times. But there's no doubt that TDs are paid too much and therefore can be out of touch with the people they represent. Yeah,
the reality is if we expect other people to do it and we're ruining their lives without prevention, that's what we should be doing. And I can assure you, we'd probably get a result a lot quicker.
Katie, just watching your debate, my opinion is to adopt similar to the new France curfew, also on the spot fines for not wearing a mask. And of course, we're just hearing today, sorry, just to tell people if they are not following the news from France, a national emergency declared there, and some of the major cities, including Paris, are now gone into curfew from 9 p.m. until 6 a.m., which is obviously a huge move. But on the masks issue, because it was referred to by the Taoiseach in his statement that enhanced messaging around wearing masks rather than visors. It's a bit late in the day for that. I've been watching these people with visors for months, and I've seen research coming through on it for weeks and weeks. And are we not a bit slow to have stepped in and reminded people what the research says about the difference between wearing a mask and wearing a visor?
The virus has been in the country since February, March. We're still learning a lot about the virus. I remember at the very start of the pandemic, masks were thought to be ineffective. And now we're at a point where masks are one of the most effective way of preventing the spread of the virus. So we're learning all the time. I believe that NPHET and the Cabinet are reacting to information as it comes in as fast as they possibly can. So listen, that's we're learning more and more about the virus. Like, for example, why when we have an almost record amount of cases today in the country, do we only have... you know, we have 30 people in ICU. That's actually down one from yesterday, so or from the last report. So it's actually reducing the amount of people in ICU. The amount of people in being hospitalised isn't increasing massively. And the deaths, we had sadly 5 deaths today. That's 5 too many. But they aren't increasing in line with what they were, as Rona said, in April and May. So it's not that the virus is changing, but the science in how we understand the virus is certainly changing. So, you know, we're adapting as fast as we can.
Katie, it's fine to say the government must consider other issues, but what does it matter if we end up in prolonged restrictions? Travelling through Dublin on Sunday and all outside areas were full, little or no social distancing, groups sitting back to back. Is it any wonder the figures are where we are? And I think your idea is taking off, Verona. Mary Brickley on Twitter is saying lockdowns would be consigned to history if all politicians were forced to live on the pandemic unemployment payment.
Well, it's certainly a different approach.
Gráinne?
Yeah, I suppose the debate between NPHET versus the government is complicated. Really, what, if you take that, put that aside to one second, what we're really debating here and have been for weeks is where along the scale between public health and the economy do you stop that icon? So at what point do you say, this is the amount of cases we're going to take to keep businesses open at this level and keep this many people in jobs, et cetera, et cetera. So when the government are still trying to figure that out, part of the reason why we have places open with the amount of cases we do, but, you know, hospital numbers are actually low and ICU numbers are low by comparison, is because of contact tracing. We're finding not just more cases, but cases connected to that original one. And because of that, the cases are much higher than you know, hospital numbers would have been back in mid-April. And Leo Varadkar is actually a big proponent of looking at hospital numbers versus cases numbers, because that's actually where our capacity lies. The reason why wet pubs haven't been open is because we don't have enough ICU beds, like, to put it in a very glib one sentence. And that's why we're suffering. Our hospital systems, our healthcare system isn't equipped to deal with a crisis like this. And we have people on trolleys for every winter because of the flu, which happens every year. We know it's going to happen, and we still don't prepare for that. And this pandemic, how Ireland has, you know, reacted to the pandemic, is the worst case scenario, from not funding the healthcare service properly to the point that it's impacting on citizens individually, people, you know, SME owners, and people on minimum wage in the worst and most extreme possible way.
OK, Gráinne, we're going to leave that there, because I want to move on. Because today, campaigners have called for the government to prevent records compiled by the Commission of Investigation into mother and baby homes being sealed for 30 years. Senators also expressed serious concerns over proposed legislation related to the Commission's records in debate in the Senate today. The Clan Project, Justice for Magdalens, and the Adoption Rights Alliance are against the records being sealed, saying it will result in people not being able to access information about their disappeared relatives or babies who are buried in unmarked graves. I'm joined on the line now by Dr. Maeve O'Rourke, lecturer and director of the Human Rights Law Clinic. Maeve, what kind of information are we talking about here that is heading for these archives?
Well, Katie, the government actually hasn't told us what is in the archive that they say is going to be sealed. But it is essentially everything that is not going to be transferred to Tuzla. So the bill that came in to the Senate today proposes separating the archive of the Mother and Baby Homes Commission and sending a database on the underlying records relating to mothers and children who are in 15 institutions to Tuzla. The minister would not receive a copy of that, so it would interfere with the integrity of the archive, and then sealing everything else. So if we think about what that might be, and we've asked that the index would be produced, but that's an amendment that will have to be fought for. It is presumably all of the state files, all of the correspondence, all of the religious files, all of the diplomatic files, all of the financial records, the inspection records. This could run into the hundreds of thousands of documents, if not more.
Now, the minister, Roderick O'Gorman, was asked who benefits from the sealing of these archives by Sarah McInerney on Drive Time today. We can just hear his answer now.
This legislation is not about the sealing of the archive. This legislation is about protecting a really valuable tool that has been created by the Commission and which can be used in the future when we provide for information
and
tracing legislation.
And I do want to get on to that in one second.
I've made a commitment to legislate on that.
Yeah, so the Minister is saying basically we've got it all wrong there.
What the minister is trying to say is, it's not my fault. It was decided years ago that this would be sealed. There's nothing I can do. The 2004 Act allowed the commission to operate in private. My hands are tied. The issue with that is that he has demonstrated by bringing in a bill that would send part of the archive to Tuzla that his hands are not tied, that the Oireachtas can legislate. Even if the commission decided to proceed in private, now the Oireachtas can say, hold on, we actually think there's a public interest and it's lawful, for whatever reason, to open up the archive to whatever degree we choose. So the minister can't have his cake and eat it too. He's brought in a bill that would send some of the files to Tuzla, i.e. would unseal part of the archive. But then in the next breath says, sorry, everything else has to be sealed and it's not my fault. It was sealed before I ever got to be minister. So we're calling on him to recognise that that is not the case and to produce the index to the archive when he gets it, so the proper debate can happen and consultation around what other parts of the archive need to be quote unquote unsealed. And I say quote unquote because nowhere in the 2004 Act does it say the word seal. And the government hasn't actually explained why it is that it believes it is required to seal everything that it's going to receive from the Commission.
OK, stay with us on the line, Maeve, would you? I want to just go to Gráinne, because you the journal.ie have written extensively on this.
Yeah, it shows how important or how powerful information can be. And I suppose it does sound from what O'Gorman is saying that, you know, that there's something else going on. But at first glance, you can understand why people are really concerned. This is something that Ireland has not handled well in the past, and even in modern times, trying to come to grips with the mother and baby homes and how women were treated in the past by the state and by Irish society at the time as well, who knew about these homes as well. You know, the kind of grappling with Ireland's past and bringing justice retrospectively is not something we have a great relationship with, particularly with very vulnerable victims. So when the state says, a minister says, there's these records relating to the mother and baby homes that we're not going to make public until 30 years' time, of course people are going to be concerned. I don't know why the government would expect any other reaction from saying something like that.
Can I, Verona, where should we be going with this?
Okay, so our regional group met today and we've requested a meeting with Roderick O'Gorman, particularly on the basis of understanding his position. Now there was a changeover from Minister Sapone. My understanding from those who are representing the issue is that they feel that Minister Sapone wasn't going to take this action and that they're now being fobbed off, that it's a new minister and this is all done and dusted. They're obviously not very happy. Our considerations are under GDPR. The remit of the commission was, if I'm correct, and I'm open to correction, was that it was going to be those that were witnesses were told that, you know, anybody that wanted to be protected under GDPR and have their names kept out, they would be redacted or whatever. There's issues there. But I also think there's issues. If there's a way, and there may be a motion brought by some of the parties, some of the others, we may bring a motion ourselves as part of a group, but there may be a way for those who can show, for instance, somebody who wants to prove paternity in some way or other, they should be entitled to access. You cannot lock up something that somebody needs to identify who they are.
Yeah, and I know, because we've covered this on this programme before, that people are very, very upset at the idea of these records being, you know, put away. And the idea of a government saying, trust us, on this one particular issue.
All the TDs, senators have received, you know, thousands and thousands. I've rarely seen a lobby like it in terms of this issue. It's caused outrage. But most importantly, the survivors, their families, their legal representatives are very, very clear that this bill should be pulled back. The minister needs to engage with them urgently. They're very clear. The 2004 Act allows the minister to take this, this precious archive under his possession. And we were in the Dáil today, and in fairness to Mary Lou MacDonald, she usually has quite robust exchanges with the Taoiseach, but she appealed to him, I thought, in a very calm manner, to urgently engage with the families and the survivors to find, to listen to what they're saying, to listen to their legal perspective, and to try to not, you know, ram this through the Dáil. And that's what they're going to do next week.
Are you going to ram this through the Dáil next week, Christopher?
Listen, as Pádraig said, I think about 6,000 emails last count. It's one of the biggest issues that...
Because it's so fundamental.
It's fundamental. And look, the time, I think we can all agree, the time has come in this country for openness and transparency, and the most important thing is justice for those who have suffered at the hands of these institutions. Minister O'Gorman, okay, I've known him, got to know him since February. To me, he seems genuine, he seems honest, and I think one of the reasons he got into politics was on the grounds of searching for justice and equality. So I'm not sure about any hidden agendas here. What I've seen from him is basically, I've written to him on the back of all these emails looking for a further explanation, because I don't want to be rushed into any decision or passing any legislation without getting a full understanding. But my decision is, my understanding is that the approach he's taken is based on the fact that if he doesn't pass legislation before the Commission publishes its report on October 30th, that the details will be redacted in that report and will be lost forever. That's my understanding. I don't have any reason to doubt him, but I'm looking for a further explanation.
Okay, let me just ask, because that is the proposition that's being floated. Maeve, what is the situation with that?
It's very strange. Essentially, I think the commission is kind of holding the report hostage until it gets this legislation, which in my view isn't necessary, because there is a legislative basis and actually a requirement under the 2004 Act for the commission to send every document that it creates or gathers to the minister at the end of its work. And the GDPR allows archiving in the public interest as a legitimate basis for data processing. So no problem there. But look, I have no problem. We don't have any problem with the Oireachtas confirming, for the avoidance of doubt, that the commission should, of course, transfer all personal data. It would be, appalling if it started to destroy such important personal data. The issue is not really that. The minister is not being fair in saying, you know, that's all that this is about. What this is about is that he's separating the archive. He is not even keeping a copy of what he proposes sending to Tuzla. And then he's saying, I can't do anything about everything else in the archive. It has to be sealed, even though he has literally just shown by sending some of it to Tuzla that it doesn't all have to be sealed.
Where do you go from here?
What we want from here is, number one, the minister would keep a full copy of the archive. Ideally, he would take the full archive without any of it going to Tuzla, because he is in a better position to respond to all personal data access requests to a full archive. But if it does have to be that some of it goes to Tuzla, he still keeps a full copy. Number two, he would guarantee to facilitate data subject access requests immediately for the people who need access to their own information and to deceased relatives' information. And thirdly, the bill would be amended so that he produces an index to that archive within a month of receiving it, anonymised to the extent necessary, so that we can actually see what's in there and have a proper debate about what further unsealing, so to speak, needs to happen.
Okay, we will leave that there, but we will watch this space, because, as I say, we understand that this is a really, really important issue for a lot of people out there. But there, we will take a break.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. We just have a couple of minutes left, but I just wanted to touch on the Minister, Education Minister Norma Foley. She confirmed today that the government is to establish a non-statutory independent review of the calculated grades process, which we know, of course, went horribly wrong for a lot of people. But she also went on to say that she promised students that next year will be as normal as possible. Christopher, is she really in any position to make those kind of promises at this stage?
Clearly, she's privy to a lot more information within the department than I am. So I don't think that she would make those type of statements without having any evidence to back it up. I know, obviously, you had the errors of coding within the calculated grade process, but I think they have made a valiant effort to do their best for all students. All 424 who were impacted by that error have been accommodated. They've made 3,000 extra places available. Actually, that's 3,424 altogether. I think they've made a great effort to try and accommodate all students.
What about the 2,820 students who have opted to sit the exam, the leaving cert, as it was, in November? Dennis Nocton saying today, he asked about this, and he said that these students won't get any support at all, even though none of them have been in school since March.
But I'm not sure what can be done in order to accommodate students who haven't been in school since March. I mean, do you set up separate tutorial facilities for them? Do you set up separate teaching facilities for them? I'm not sure if there's anything that could be done. What I do know is that their calculated grades for the majority of those students, they will go by their calculated grades if their result in the exam that they sit isn't as good as the result they get in their calculated grade.
Verona, we've a minute left.
I really don't know why they were given the option of sitting it if they were going to be given no assistance. And I think, you know, they're young, they need the assistance. And yes, it should be online grades, or grinds, I should say, for the period at least that we go into Halloween now, where we have a break. They should be given every assistance. I mean, they're trying to achieve their best. They're very brave by sitting it in the first place. And I think it's definitely not the way to go by saying they should be given no assistance, or they will be given no assistance.
Okay, and I'm sure we will hear more of that as we get closer to that November date. Just the last text there. The mother and children are entitled to openness and truth, and locking stuff away is disgraceful. Tonight's programme was produced by Caroline Dalton. Researcher was by Andrew Fleming. The broadcast coordinator is Elaine Conlon, and Ruth Kennington was on sound. I want to thank my panel for coming in. I want to thank all of you for listening, and go over now to Colin Murray on Late Day.